This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Two guests this week. They are regulars on this podcast. Chad Finn is the Boston Globe sports media writer. Austin Karp is the assistant managing editor / digital for Sports Business Journal. And we are back to do a little roundtable discussion action on a number of subjects. Chad and Austin, welcome back to the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks, Rich.
Loving the weather here in Charlotte, Rich.
I know. How dare you, as I look outside my Toronto snowy place here. But listen, God bless Charlotte, God's country. All right, let's talk. We're going to start with this, Austin, since you gave Chad and me a little bit of a rise there for your beautiful weather. We're going to start with you. NBA All-Star Game viewership came in, and it was, to be polite, garbage. 4.6 million viewers on TNT TBS. It's easily the least watched NBA All-Star game on record. Thanks to Austin Karp. I know that it was down 27% from 2022, which had Winter Olympic competition. The previous low was 5.9 million. So that is a massive, massive drop. I will get into some of the more good news for the NBA. But Austin, this is a 10-poll. This is a 10-poll event for this league. It's an incredibly sexy event for the league. Players love to be there, and I don't blame them. It's a fun weekend for them. And you do want, at the end of all this, to have some kind of signature event that you could, you know, sort of put out there in the marketplace, like, okay, these are our best players. These are the most famous, some of the most famous people in the world. Tune in, and you're going to check out this awesome stuff. That was not the case. That game was horrible. And the viewership, quite frankly, like, deserved to be horrible. What was your big picture takeaway from some pretty bad viewership here?
No, I mean, I think you get a better audience out of filming layup lines before any sort of regular season game. It's the type of audience, when you're down 20% from whatever your previous record low is, that's got to be the sort of number that forces league and network executives to get in a room and be like, what do we do here? And right. This is not without precedent. We saw that the Pro Bowl had to have some substantive changes in the past. Major League Baseball's All-Star Game had to have some substantive changes. So what is that going to look like? I don't know. Like, I mean, on terms of social media, like the NBA All-Star Game, you would think had like some sort of record number. But even Saturday night from the NBA All-Star Game, with all that noise around Mac McClung, that was a record low for a Saturday night on TV. Okay, but they're setting records on social media because all anybody wants to see are the clips of Mac McClung's winning dunks. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy there, but it goes back to how people are consuming NBA games this year in this day and age. It's a lot of social media. It's a lot of short bits of games. So yeah, like as far as a two and a half hour television product, I think they're going to have to really get in a room and look at what they want to do with the future of NBA All-Star Weekend on TV.
That's the great take, Austin, and that's right, because like they do have some positives, and you hit on that. Like their engagement on social is phenomenal, and you know the NBA, which is very, very aggressive when it comes to PR, and there's a lot of people there I respect. Jacinda Ortiz in particular, who I deal with a lot in PR, is very, very good and very, very smart. But you know they're going to highlight what was good here, and what was good here was engagement, social media metrics, average age of viewers, which beat Daytona, We'll get into Mike Mulvihill tweeting that stuff out a little bit down the road here. But Chad, you are from a city that has a legitimate chance to win a title this year. Obviously, Jason Tatum was far and away the star of that game. But, you know, like, there was at one point, and I know you, both of us are big big NBA fans, there was at one point a commitment from the players to play this game hard, at least in the fourth quarter. And they got a lot of great press from that. I'm with Austin. Like, they have to figure out what to do. And I don't know if that's making... I don't even know what that is. I don't know if it's like home court advantage in the NBA Finals is on the line. I don't know if you turn it back into East versus West. Like, I don't know what the answer is, but there has to be a change here because the this to me felt like the nadir. Like, it was just, as a person who likes that sport, I found that game unwatchable.
Well, obviously you didn't appreciate that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown combined for 90 points while eight other guys stood around and watched in the second half. That had a very specific appeal to the Boston demographics, but it was terrible for every other city. But I don't know how they fix it. I saw a great clip on social, of course, where all the NBA clips are, and it was from the, I believe, 1993, the last time they're in Salt Lake City, and it looked like a real basketball game. It was the greatest players in the game, Jordan, Barkley, everybody else, but they were actually playing. And I don't know how you get that back. I mean, you can go to the league can go to the players union and the players and say, listen, the charade of the layup line here needs to end. But how do you translate to the court if the players aren't taking it seriously and just trying to get through it, you know, without getting hurt and losing a 9-figure contract because of that? So I don't know how they fix it. You mentioned tying it to like something important.
Yeah, home court advantage for the finals.
It was a disaster in baseball. I mean, everybody hated it. Yeah. I don't know, maybe that would be different with basketball, but it really just requires the commitment of the players to changing how they play the game. And I don't know if you're going to get that. It's more of a show than an actual contest.
So, you know, like, one of the things that baseball has figured out is that the skills competition part is really, really attractive to people. Home Run Derby. I don't think Austin did it. It hasn't still beaten the game, right? It's come close, but it hasn't
been. And if it changed this year, it wouldn't surprise me. But I mean, like you said, you hit on it. It's a show. So lean into that. Okay. We don't need a game per se. We saw how well received the NFL's, I mean, it was a flag football game. Okay. But let's have the stars come out. People want to see the stars. Is it a 3-on-3 game? Is it, I agree that I don't think awarding the NBA Finals home court advantage is the answer, but maybe your team gets some extra ping pong balls in the lottery. I don't know. They got to get creative.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think would be cool is I think actually if you did, 12-person roster, 6 WNBA players, 6 NBA players, and played it would be interesting. That's something I think would be interesting. Maybe others would not. There are things that they can do with the skills competition. But here's the interesting thing, Austin. And again, this was from Sports Business Journal, I think from you, in fact. Or maybe it's from the NBA and sort of passed it on. But like there's very good stories this year in the NBA. Particularly attendance is a good one. They're playing at 96% capacity this year, which is up 6% from last year. This is at the halfway point. Their average attendance is 17,972 fans, you know, presuming that they're counting this honestly. So in-game, like, they're doing phenomenal. Like, the in-game experience is, like, there, and people are interested in the NBA. They do have to figure out, I think, what to do with this showcase. And then, and this is where I want to get you on, Austin, too. The first half viewership was flat versus last season, which I would call that a win, just given the era that we're in. To me, flat is always the new up. Yeah, out of home numbers actually kicked that up. So again, it's not an apples to apples comparison, let's say with like 2018, 2017. But, you know, it's not like they're spiraling downward. It's just this particular weekend was a mess. How do you look at the NBA right now, just in terms of sort of the health of the league, in terms of eyeballs, viewership, et cetera?
Yeah, I think you separate this weekend from what the regular season is doing. And I am bullish on the back half of the season. I think that they always backload a lot of these important games. They have the ability to flex out. You're going to flex out a lot of those Nets games. I don't think you're going to see a bunch of those on ESPN or TNT. They're going to try to get out of as many of those as possible. I think you want to see some more Suns games, but it's not like we were always wanting to watch a lot of the West Coast games anyways in that 10 o'clock window. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what they do with some of those 7 o'clock games. But, I mean, there's also the problem on the RSN side, which is just a whole podcast into itself. They have a little bit – I think you do need to separate the fact that the NBA All-Star game needs to be fixed. But the product is having a good season. Like you said, attendance is there. TV numbers are generally there. I'm sure they hope the Warriors were a little bit better in the back half. I think they're hoping that LeBron makes at least a push for the play-in series there.
You need the Lakers to have some kind of playoff.
Yeah, you got
to
have something
relevancy.
If they don't, and then LeBron takes his injury time off at the back half of the season, you know, they're late. I think that would suck for some TV numbers, but. I don't think it's a systemic issue with the NBA numbers overall. I think this is kind of isolated to what the NBA All-Star game has become.
Yeah, and I will get, as Austin referenced, we'll talk about Diamond Sports Group and the possible prearranged Chapter 11 bankruptcy coming up and how that's going to impact a ton of you who are listening to this, depending where you are in the country. And I'll get sort of the more business specific reporters who've been working on that on a daily basis, but obviously that's a massive story when it comes to basketball, and certainly a massive one in baseball. I'm sure you've read about that, Chad. If I'm playing the NBA viewership game, I might want the Celtics versus the Suns in the final.
Yeah, I think that's probably their number one wish, right? Other than maybe
it's the Lakers is the number one wish because it's LeBron, but I don't know. I almost, realistic wish. But the Celtics will be a phenomenal draw in the East. No offense to the Bucks, who have an incredible team and obviously one of the world's greatest players, if not the greatest player. But there's a difference in television interest with the Celtics versus the Bucks.
They're just happy your home city of Toronto isn't in the mix this year.
My home city will make the playoffs. Played much better in the last couple of weeks with the Jakob Poeltl trade, but I would not expect a parade.
I think they're happy the Knicks are there. Knicks are back in the playoffs. Are they a contender? No, but them back in the playoff picture is good.
What's the appeal of Philly? Is there high appeal of the Sixers?
Great television market that over. I mean, this is Austin's expertise, but Austin, tell me if I'm wrong. Great television market that usually over indexes because, like, when their teams are in the playoffs, the households that actually tune into sports go through the roof.
Yeah. And, what kind of worries me about Boston, though, Chad, unfortunately, is how everything performed last year during the finals. Boston's a badass team with badass players who I would love to watch as an NBA fan, but I totally expected more of a return on investment there during the finals last year. And it just gives me a little bit of pause.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's because...
Warrior fatigue, too.
That, too. Absolutely.
Yeah, some. And like as great as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are, let's take Jason Tatum. Like, there's a difference between Jason Tatum and Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, right? Like, it's just like there's a...
In terms of...
LeBron James.
Well, yeah. I don't know any of them drawing 55 in the All-Star games. So.
I'm not talking about in-game play, Chad. I'm talking about recognizability and sort of...
I think that elevated
casual fan it.
Yeah.
Casual fan interest.
I think he took the step, actually, not to Curry's level. He and LeBron stand alone, but... and maybe Durant's on that tier, although he's hurt all the time. But...
All-Star game helps.
All-Star game launching his own signature shoe under the Jordan brand was a big marketing moment for him. And I think we see from this point forward, he's really in the conversation with guys like Luka and probably ahead of Embiid and up there maybe on that Giannis level going forward. This feels in a lot of ways, and I'm kind of in the middle of it up here, so maybe my point of view is a little skewed, but kind of feels like the year of Tatum is underway.
Is there something like,
and I think people think differently.
Is he so good? Is he like Jokic where he's just so well-rounded that it's boring sometimes? He doesn't have those flashy Ja Morant dunks or blocks off the backboard.
Everything he's methodical.
He's so methodical.
Yeah, efficient.
Yeah.
I think Luka, like, I think in terms of viewability, they're both incredible. Luka does some things, though, that are, like, really just off the charts in terms of, like, three-pointers from what feels like, you know, Steph Curry land and stuff like that.
Weird angle shots.
I love Jason Tatum. He's a top five player in the league to me. I think, I could be wrong, but I think the casual sports fan will think differently of Jason Tatum with a title. Yes. I just think like he would get elevated to a different belief. I'm not talking hardcore NBA fans. I'm just talking about people who might like certainly, oh, I've heard of this guy LeBron or I've heard of this guy Giannis.
He's on Ruffles like bags stuff now. Yeah, when those commercials of Barkley and I don't know who the other two, it's a WNBA player and some other NBA player that escaped me right now, but he's getting those kind of opportunities marketing wise. And he's the redemption story this year in a lot of ways. Cause he played poorly in the finals against the Warriors last year. And, worked his ass off in the off season, was kind of fueled by that disappointment. So it feels like this is a continuation of that story for him. We'll see how it ends, but it does need to end for him to make that leap with the title for sure.
Yeah, Tatum's the best player on that team, but my favorite player to watch is Jaylen Brown.
Not me,
I
man.
Love that guy. He just does everything right.
Drawing a blank on what the number is, but they're better with him off the court than on.
Oh, he's the only guy who
doesn't move the ball. Yeah. Offensive and defensive rating. You know, so points per 100 possession.
I love Jaylen, Toronto, but he's, we'll take him here.
Jaylen is totally dependent on getting his own points.
Okay. All right. Well, but this is a, we'll sit, you know, I know you have 15,000 NBA podcasts to choose from. So at the ringer alone. Exactly.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Okay, all right, let's move on to MLS and Apple. You're going to listen to this on Monday. So the first weekend of the highly anticipated season pass will have begun. Every match, regular season, postseason, League Cups, All-Star Game, developmental leagues can now all be accessed on the Apple TV app, Apple TV, et cetera. It is a massive, obviously game-changing thing when it comes to sports media in terms of all this under one roof that keep in mind that is separate from how many people will actually watch it. You know, no one's, at least on this podcast, you know, we all understand that the MLS is not it's not the NFL, it's not Premier League, it's, you know, last year the numbers during the regular season, 250,000, viewers. I mean, Austin could tell you this now, you know, that and the MLS Cup got, you know, 1 million if it's on a Fox or something like that. So again, we're talking relative niche product, but it's a really, really interesting thing that they're doing. They've invested a shitload into quality announcers, studio shows, whip around coverage. So if you're an MLS fan, this is kind of like dreamland for you. Austin, again, we have not seen it yet, but we will all see it this weekend, but what do you anticipate here? And again, just sort of general thoughts on this.
Well, I don't anticipate we're going to see the sorts of, you know, number. I don't know if we'll see any numbers, but if we do see the sorts of numbers, I don't think it's going to give us a true indication of how this thing is performing. It's also a decade-long bet by Major League Soccer.
Yep.
But we're not going to have that indication like we get from Thursday Night Football this past season of how the NFL is performing. Remember, we didn't really get those breakouts for a long time. We don't get breakouts for how Major League Baseball is performing on a Peacock or on YouTube or
Apple.
Apple, right.
So I think the numbers are going to, you know, there wasn't much there on linear TV anyways, like you said. Yeah, this is such a fantastic at-venue product. And like the NHL and some of their numbers, it just doesn't equate to TV, which is why the NHL put a large majority of their games on those digital products, on ESPN+. And they have more of a linear TV presence than obviously MLS does. But I want to see what the response is. I think if you're a team, you're pretty pissed off. You're losing a lot of those local TV dollars, especially if you're a bigger team like Chicago Fire or LA Galaxy or LAFC. That's all now kind of was taken back by the league and put on this Apple product. So I think those are some of the teams that are going to feel the pinch, economically. But if you're a smaller team, I don't think it impacts you as much there. I am interested to see. I know other people in other sports. If you're the Pac-12, you're really interested to see how this does. It's strictly behind a paywall. 100%. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. For, I mean, again, Chad, to me, like they will be successful if they can show proof of concept, meaning that if the product itself is good, forget about what the dollars are. And I think all of us who have actually inquired about this, and quite frankly, usually like their competitors will leak it. Not many people will watch an Apple Television's baseball coverage. That's just to be blunt.
Right,
like
right.
You know, I don't know the exact numbers, but they were not good. For sure. So, you know, the expectations here in terms of viewership should not be high, and I don't think they will be high, Chad. But what I think Apple/MLS has to do, then this is the main goal, is exactly what Amazon's main goal was for the NFL. It's put on a quality product that fans think this is really high quality. There's no difference between this and linear television.
Yeah.
And then look at all these extra things that we get. That to me is like how they'll succeed or not succeed. And they're also charging a lot. Like, relatively speaking, if you're a diehard MLS fan, you'll get it. But if you're a casual sports fan, you know, you're asking me to pony up $80, $100 for the year. That's a big ask if I'm not a big fan of this. So that's what I think, that, you know, if they can prove proof of concept year one, then to me they win. That's what they should be thinking about.
Yeah, it needs to be conventional. It can't be like what they did with trying to make baseball quirky on the Friday nights with Hunter Pence and Katie Nolan, who's not back doing it. And she was on Kenny Mayne's podcast and said, thank God it's effing done, when back in November when it was over. So the way they have to approach this is recognizing they're probably going to have a much younger demo than baseball, and one that is going to know how to find them on streaming. I've had some complaints of New England Revolution fans saying, great, it's not on local TV up here anymore. What is a streaming service? How do I get this? How much do I have to pay? And I think for a few more years, probably, if we keep going this path with streaming, and there's not a revolt back to cable, that people eventually come out of that mindset and understand how to navigate all of this. But it's really important to have a conventional broadcast that appeals to true soccer fans, because they're the ones who are going to watch it and they're the ones who are going to know how to find it.
And I think, I had the podcast before you two, I had Taylor Twellman, Marcelo Balboa, and Daniel Slayton. So I had three of their new broadcasts, quite frankly, three of their high profile new hires. And I think, like, you know, that alone tells me that they're serious. Like, they've brought in some very, very good people to do this. I think if there's one thing they could use, it's probably like a signature play-by-play voice, like John Champion, Ian Dark, Andres Cantor. Like, they don't have that. They don't have like the signature.
Do you count John Strong in that group?
He's gonna do. I off the top of my head, I think he may do some Fox games, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But like, that would be it. So no, I don't count him that, because I don't think his number of games are gonna be that high. But yes, I would count him if he was. You know, if it was a different package and like Fox had the main package,
right.
Then yes, I might. But so that's it. But otherwise, like I love the amount of tonnage that they're going to give the MLS fan in terms of these studio programming stuff. The one thing that Taylor Twellman said to me, as I asked him about this, I said, do you fear that you're not going to get any kind of coverage on places like ESPN now that they're not a rights holder partner?
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually had to give really interesting answers. He's like, one, well, how much were we getting anyway? Which is totally fair. And then two, I think he was saying like the story is going to be too big to avoid, particularly if Miami gets Leo Messi.
I was going to say, so that, you want to talk about what's going to drive it? It's going to be something like that. If I want to watch Netflix Miami, then that might be a reason to sign up for Apple TV. It would be.
1,000%. I mean, again, if you're interested in this subject, go back to my podcast from a couple of days ago. That would be there. In my opinion, there's no bigger singular move that any professional sports team could make in terms of bringing a athlete to the forefront than if MLS got Messi. He is the world's most famous athlete, or second, if you want to put Ronaldo there or whatever. It would be game changing for the league, even if the guy came at 36.
They did have a decent turnout for that parade after they won the World Cup.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Yeah. So again, we'll all pay attention to that. I'll bring you guys back on after we take a look at it. I was on a, like other media people, I sort of got a tour of like what their plans were in terms of like what the studio is going to look like and what things will look like from Apple TV perspective. I mean, it looks sharp, but again, you know, the proof will be in the pudding and we'll ultimately have to watch this stuff. But I'll be curious because like Austin said, it's a 10-year, I think I'm right about that, right? 10 years, 8 years, whatever. Like it's not just about this year. It's about long-term future. And quite frankly, it's not just about MLS because all these other companies are like, well, if this thing works, the whole paradigm maybe shifts. Mm-hmm. And then you start seeing maybe some major sports behind the paywall forever. So that's really what to pay attention to. All right. A couple more topics I want to get to. Daytona, Austin, 8.2 million viewers for the Daytona 500. So a little bit down from last year, but generally speaking, not kind of falling off a cliff or anything like that. That, as you point out, is essentially what Fox would get for Ohio State, Penn State football game. They blow away, obviously, Indy 500. They're honestly, you cannot compare the Daytona 500 to any F1 race. It's just, it's 4X. It's not close. So I think if you're Fox, like, you're generally happy with that, although it's not, you know, it's not like headline news here. You didn't set any kind of new record. The sport still isn't close to what it used to get. I think for casual fans, it still can be a little bit of a challenge understanding the rules and things like that. So how did you... how'd you just sort of feel about the race when you saw the final viewership number, et cetera?
I mean, good luck finding 8 million people to do anything on TV these days. I mean, that's what it boils down to. When I compared it to Penn State, Ohio State, that was a top 10 football game this past season. Okay. And if you're football just needs to be completely separate almost from the conversation of other sports these days. And college football is creating its own little niche as the number two sport. Okay, and separating itself from a lot of the other properties. But if you take away like NFL football this coming year for 2023, if you take NFL out of the equation, I still don't think that Daytona 500 is going to be one of the 50 most watched broadcasts on television. It's just not there. It's not at the NBA Finals. It's not at the World Series level. It's not one of those properties. But it is by far the top motorsports property out there. And I think you're going to see that. I think the incumbents will probably renew on the media rights side at some sort of uptick for NASCAR, which is what I think they want to see, which is what the teams want to see because they want a bigger slice of that pie. But 8 million? Yeah. As long as they stayed above 8 million, I was pretty, that was a solid number for me. It was a holiday weekend. You had a lot of sports, a lot of properties looking to take advantage of the first big weekend that the NFL wasn't on. So the XFL is like, we want to go out this weekend. NBA All-Star, like, we're on this weekend. The PGA Tour put one of their elevated events with Tiger Woods playing on Sunday. It was a big weekend for sports. There was a lot going on. Oh, and it was beautiful outside on many of the East Coast markets. So they were working from a hole to begin with, you know, as far as hut levels, you know, being what they are. You know, houses using televisions, that, you know, watching TV and all that. So 8 million, very respectable number. Is it kind of the lowest yet for when a Daytona 500 ran in its natural window on a Sunday? Yeah, it was. Okay, but that's kind of expected for a lot of properties these days.
Chad, I'm going to get to you on XFL. So let me finish with Austin on Daytona. So I kind of love this because like it's sort of the really like the inside baseball of this. So someone I've mentioned on this podcast before, Michael Mulvihill, a very, very bright guy. He is the he's in charge of strategy and analytics for Fox Sports, and really the reason how they game changed their college football coverage, because he identified that the noon kickoff window could be a place where Fox could win. and totally game changed their viewership and their coverage in terms of college football, in terms of the Big Ten. It actually set up them to have a while still trails by a lot, by a ton of viewership, they at least have a program now in their college football pregame show that at least is destination viewing for some. So I'm giving Mulva Hill flowers just to, before I now take my shot at him, right? So he I love this story. So he tweets out, he's talking about the gap between the Daytona 500 and the NBA All-Star game. Now, he's a Fox guy. He's obviously taken a shot at an ESPN, Warner Brothers Discovery property, and he's given his own property some love. We all see this, or at least, you know, I hope those of us who write about this stuff see this. So here's the thing, Austin. Comparing the Daytona 500 to the NBA All-Star game is absurd. The Daytona 500 is essentially the Super Bowl of NASCAR, correct? It's like the one sport where the biggest race starts at the beginning. So, like, Ben Cafardo or Chris LaPlaca like tweet out the NBA Finals viewership against whatever race NASCAR is running on June 14th? Because that would be the same.
Yes,
they should.
They
absolutely
should.
Same equivalent, and then give you the gap between that. So of course, I mean, like, yeah, your point. I get Mulvihill's point. His point is that the NBA All-Star game is fading. We all agree. I mean, we just spent 13 minutes on that. But you can't compare the – I mean, Daytona 500 is far and away the signature event in NASCAR. It blows away every other race. It's an event.
Yeah.
Like, it's an event in the same
in
way the
other
Masters
sports.
Is an event, in the same way the Olympics is an event. I mean, you know, you can't compare that. And if you're the NBA, right, what you're going to counter that, your counter is, well, what'd you do in 18-49 because we beat you. And I'm right on that, Austin. Right, the NBA All Star Game still, even with declining ratings, still beat Daytona. So I found that hilarious, Austin. I know that's very inside baseball viewership wise.
I had a lot of eye rolls.
Good job by Mulvihill, though. He got 200
email or text.
He got 258,000 views.
Like, yeah, it was great. It was good. He's defending his property. Well, I think NASCAR takes a lot of shots. You know, they take a lot of hits. That it's
yeah,
you know,
which is not true. Total fallacy.
White males over the age of 85 years old that watch their sport. It's not
85.
True. It's not true. I mean, they've taken a lot of grief over these last couple of years with F1 Drive to Survive, and oh my God, F1 is the next biggest thing.
Yeah, crushes.
The Daytona 500 at its lowest is 4x, four times better than the best F1 races ever here. So I think they would just want to. You know, they want to really put it out there like, hey, we're still, you know, King Kong here in terms of motorsports series.
Yeah, I found that. Listen, and again, I had Larry McReynolds and Mike Joy on. Obviously, I like NASCAR. I've talked about this many times on podcasts. One of my favorite assignments ever at Sports Illustrated was going to 6 tracks in 8 weeks. It was incredible. Like Austin said, that's really what changed my entire perception of NASCAR fans. The point is, like, it's not just like 75-year-old dudes from like the South watching Smokey and the Bandit. It's like that's a caricature that isn't the case. So yeah, so I wanted to just I thought that stat was funny by Mulvihill. So hopefully, you know, if you got an extra house in Malibu, I hope it was worth it for him. All right, let's go to the XFL. Chad, I am one, while, you know, I like to see people have jobs and both in broadcasting and on the field. And I actually root for these leagues to succeed because I think it's really good for, like, the athletes to have a chance to make a professional living if you're not good enough to make the NFL. I am one who does not believe in spring football as a long-term play. And I think the XFL viewership ultimately is going to fade after this first week and continue to go down. As Austin chronicled in SBJ, comparing it to the XFL from a couple years ago, it was a dud. I don't see it. Like, and that's independent of the fact that I thought the broadcasting stuff that they did was very, very cool. I loved seeing Dean Blandino talk about, like, the calls and go, like, that's awesome stuff. And maybe the NFL is going to adopt that, but I just don't see this as a long-term viewership play. By the way, same thing with the USFL. I would not bet long-term on that product either. So your first impressions from the first week of the new XFL, XFL 2.0.
Well, I'm with you. I don't think it's going to work for a couple of reasons. One, which you've discussed before, which is that you just can't really have star power because these are all guys that haven't been able to stick in the best league. You know, sometimes you have guys who were big names in college who didn't translate to the NFL for one reason or another. But for the most part, it's the guy you remember being let go in the last cut down, you know, the previous August, which just there's a ceiling on the appeal of that when your stars are guys who can't get into the best league in the world. The other thing is pretty obvious to me. I think the NFL's just made everything year round now. So when you need your football fix, you're not looking to watch a football game on, you know, ABC on Sunday afternoon or whatever, Saturday afternoon or whatever day it's on. But you're thinking about the draft. You're thinking about what your NFL team is going to do and free agency and the combine, you know, coming up in a week. And those are things that are on football fans' mind rather than trying to get or to prioritizing watching a game, any game, just because you love the sport.
Austin?
Yeah. Spring football is the numbers that they're getting, XFL and USFL, I got to admit, are higher than what I thought they would get. It is you're getting over 1 million viewers generally. That's a business. That's a TV business. And a lot of sports properties would kill for those numbers. Okay. I mean, college men's basketball on ESPN is averaging under 1 million viewers. I mean, obviously the tonnage is way different, but that's just like ESPN, the main feed. My point is, you're going to continue to see these exist because they're getting those sorts of numbers. And Chad, what you were saying, like, just take out XFL and insert MLS. And I think that's MLS's problem. These are players that if they were good, they'd be in Europe. And if they were any good in Europe, they wouldn't be here. I think MLS has that sort of reputation still, unfortunately. Like I said, the AdVenue product is incredible, but sports fans are incredibly smart, smarter than people give them credit for. They know what they're watching. Okay. Don't people just like football in this country is what it boils down to. People would rather watch football, even if it's minor league football with the potential of a Kurt Warner type situation where eventually, by some miracle, they end up as an emergency quarterback who comes in and takes somebody to the Super Bowl or becomes a success somehow. Football is just different than other sports. So I think there is room for minor league football in this country. Are the numbers going to drop off dramatically from those week one numbers of XFL? I think they're going to drop. I don't know how much, but yeah, you always see a drop from week one. And what is the USFL going to get in season two? They had pretty decent numbers last year, but, you know, and there's a gap there. There's not a lot of overlap between XFL and USFL. Much later April start for USFL. But, you know, that's what people want to watch. That's what people are going to watch. And they're going to continue to get spots on TV.
Yeah, it's a good counter. And you made your point. That was well-made points. I don't see the long-term future here, but I certainly would own it if I'm wrong, and we'll pay attention. You are the one thing Austin did say, he's correct. 1 million viewership. That's a business, a legit business that you can take. Austin, real quick, Chad, if you want to weigh in, you can. LIV starts this weekend, or just when you're listening to this, they will have completed their first weekend. They're on the CW, although there are certainly some CW affiliates who I believe do not have to necessarily pick them up. We'll see what kind of ultimate coverage they get on the CW networks. Boy, there's a great piece by Sally Jenkins in the Washington Post who just took LIV to school. I'm not a big golf fan. I think everybody who listens to this podcast knows it's not something I would watch other than out of my own curiosity just to see how it looks on LIV, although I've seen LIV because we've gotten it in Canada last year. Austin, I'll start with you. Like, I mean, you know, the deal is what it was, right? I mean, it's they got some kind of linear carrier, but it doesn't feel like it's going to pop at all. I think there maybe even is an argument that, like, LIV year two doesn't even feel as sexy as it, you know, perhaps might have felt year one, if that's even the right term. So I guess I'm curious to see, like, whatever numbers come out, if they come out. But, man, I don't know. It does the momentum for me doesn't really – I don't see it, but I'm admittedly not a golf guy.
No, I'm not bullish on it in terms of a TV product for sure. And I don't even know if we're going to see ratings. They might just be internal. You know, it's not, CW is not a channel that ever really measured during the daytime. They had to completely adjust their measurement.
Right.
So is that going to happen?
Yep.
Likely. But when are we going to see numbers? I can't tell you that. I don't know. But I'm not. Yeah, it feels like there's a lot less noise. I did watch, like, the golf documentary Full Swing, right, on Netflix. And you watch, like, you know, the segment on Brooks Koepka, and it's like he can't figure it out. And that was a whole episode about he doesn't really know if he's going to be a solid golfer again. And that's who you're kind of banking on, guys like that. And Dustin Johnson, who oh my God, he seems miserable.
He seems miserable.
And it wasn't.
Yeah, but he's getting paid. Yeah. I mean, I've read all about that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, like, I think for some of these guys, it turns out to be, if you can't compete on the PGA Tour, this other group's just giving you a massive payday. That's a good thing. The bad thing, of course,
that was Sally's point, right?
The thing again, I would respect you if you're like, I'm just in it for the cash, and I have no morality in terms of where the money is coming from. Like, I may not do that myself, but in some way, I could at least respect your honesty. I don't buy.
That's pretty much what Ian Porter said. He's got houses and kids.
Anybody who says this is about growing the game, to me,
no, I don't buy it. I don't think anybody buys that.
Yeah.
And if you took the money, it's not a judging or anything, but if I'm a sports fan and I'm a casual golf fan, okay, I'm going to watch, if Tiger's on, I'm going to watch a major. And I know these guys got to earn it. Okay. If you suck, you're going home. And I respect that about the PGA Tour.
And Chaz, is there anything you wanted to add? I mean, again, like, you know, we all make sort of these calculations and stuff. I do think there is a difference between, you know, watching the Olympics and sort of hating the IOC, and watching the World Cup and hating FIFA, and both those entities are horrific. But it does feel a little more the underbelly of this feels a little bit more to me, a little more seemly than for LIV than for other entities. But
it feels like it's going to fall apart soon.
I mean, Saudi Wealth Fund has endless amounts of money. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure I'd buy that.
It does, but these guys are having second thoughts.
Some of the golfers are. Yeah, I agree.
Everybody. Yeah, they seem miserable. They really do.
It doesn't. I mean, again, I know I'm a little over my skis here because it's not like I watch golf all the time. It doesn't feel like this is some kind of festival of fun. Right, it just feels like these guys are.
But they play rock music.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure, you know, Greg Norman will do another interview with someone, and people who are into golf can read that. And again, I like the fact that there's competition and guys can sort of choose, and women can choose like different places to play. But at least for me, this ain't it. All right, a couple more here. Charles Barkley on CNN. I think all three of us. Like Charles Barkley, our own interactions with him as well as him on television. Is he perfect? No, like obviously not. But I've always admired him in terms of like speaking his mind and being a performer on television, unlike anyone else in the sports media space. That said, Charles Barkley as a CNN analyst, I don't think Charles is probably going to enjoy that as much as he might conceptually think he might. You know, it's a very toxic environment now in terms of cable news. And Barkley has always been interesting, I think, because when he delves into politics, Chad, he's delving into it from the sports world, right? Very different than if you're, you know, like even a couple of the specials that he had, it was sort of still Charles Barkley, sports person, who's sort of trying to have a conversation about race in America. Very different if you're doing a show like on a weekly or daily basis where you're like bringing in politician X or, someone who's political advocacy person Y. Like that to me doesn't feel like a good mix, even with Barkley's fame. I know he said he's a loyalist for his company, et cetera, wants to help them out. But if I was his agent, I would, like Liv, I would advise him to not do this. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think he's, you know, Barkley's kind of Teflon and one of those rare people who can kind of get away with saying things that other people can't. I wonder if that would be the case if he were at a news network rather than the sports guy chiming in from time to time. Yeah, I mean, he's already called it what a shit show, right?
Like you told that to Marchand.
In terms of
really good.
Yeah, CNN. Yeah, and that he and Gayle King are a package deal. So I don't know how that would.
I would advise Gayle King if I was her agent. The same thing. What do you? What don't jump? But CNN's a it is a shit show right now. It's a mess. Don't be attaching your name to this stuff.
It feels like, I mean, we all love Barkley for good reason, but it feels like it wouldn't end well. I just kind of get that sense from
any side. Any side involved.
Well, no, you see it for CNN, who are desperate for any kind of people to bring them viewership.
Which is why I don't see it as an upside for CNN, because you're going to have to walk it back, what I feel is going to be pretty quickly. But I looked at it, if I took a long-term view, and if I were CNN, I wouldn't have done it. Charles is, like you said, he's among the best. He's a Hall of Famer on the court, in the studio.
Yep.
But it's not something that would have interested me to watch as a fan.
Yeah. Don Lemon, what are you doing, man? Anyway, it's a different podcast for other people.
Yeah.
He needs Ernie, Kenny, and Shaq.
Yeah, in many ways. Yeah, it's actually interesting, Chad, because, like, again, as much as I really appreciate Barkley solo, that would get tired. Like, it works because he's a very different kind of voice than Kenny and Shaq and Ernie. So I'm with you on that 1,000%.
Yeah.
All right, we can, I guess we'll just end quickly on Pac-12. Austin, I know that, your place obviously is knee deep into this, and whether it's John Orand or Michael Smith or others, you guys have always done excellent reporting on this. The one thing I could tell people from having made a number of calls last week and obviously interacting with our college football folks who will continue to write stuff, et cetera. The one thing that I am sure of, and I can certainly say, is that, like, Amazon has interest in the Pac-12. They have interest in it in terms of their price, not necessarily the price that I think the Pac-12 would like. And I think Amazon has interest certainly conceptually and fundamentally, because they could use their Thursday Night Football product to promote a big-time Friday night Pac-12 game. It'll be a little harder to promote that one on Saturday, just given they'd be running up against competition in the SEC, Big Ten. So all the talk about Amazon, which has been all the talk, obviously, until the New York Post report on Apple, like, conceptually, that all makes sense, because there would be an interest there in terms of premium property. But it's not like Amazon has to have this. So that's part one. Part two, it goes back to the same thing with ESPN. You just saw massive layoffs at Disney. You just saw Bob Iger publicly tell Jimmy Pitaro, we got to be judicious in terms of, like, the properties we want. And if you're Jimmy Pitaro, you just look down the pike and you're like, the NBA is a big part of who we are DNA-wise. We want the college football playoffs. NASCAR is coming up in terms of a media deal. I don't think Disney would get into the WWE, but that's sitting out there. Like, my larger point is, like, there are other Disney's going to want, or ESPN's going to want, the women's basketball tournament if that goes on its own. So ESPN has got some other things of interest other than the Pac-12. Though, again, I think if the price was right, I they would obviously be interested in the inventory. They're the home of college football. So, Austin, this is my long filibuster way to say that there's no question the Pac-12 waited too long to make this deal. They're in a terrible leverage position in terms of trying to get money. Forget about SEC or Big Ten money. They're in a bad leverage place to try to get Big 12 money. I think they will ultimately get a deal because they have inventory, and all these places want inventory. So they do have a product people want. But, man, this is, I think, not going to end up how the Pac-12 administrators, Pac-12 college presidents dreamed of a year ago.
Thank you to the gentleman from Ontario for ceding the floor there after the filibuster. George Klyavkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12, was not really left in a good situation there by Larry Scott, and then USC and UCLA going. They're kind of, it's an existential moment, I think, for the Pac-12. I don't think anybody's going to be pleased with whatever they get, whether it's taking a few more dollars to go with an Amazon or an Apple. I don't think anybody's going to like that. I don't think fans are going to like it. And if you're the school presidents, I don't know if you insist on being on having an exclusive linear TV package, you're not going to get the dollars. They're just not there. It's a game of musical chairs. And unfortunately, right now, they're the ones without a chair. And it also means if you're pissed off with the package you're getting, you're looking over the horizon. You're looking at what Brett Yormark was able to do for his conference. If you're one of the schools left in the Pac-12, and this is a conference where Oregon is your top football team, and they're not the Oregon of 10 years ago. And you can make an argument that,
but still an attractive program to a Big Ten or other.
There
places.
Are attractive to, sure. to other conferences to fill out. If you're trying to get the 24
Washington
teams,
yeah. as well, Stanford.
If you're,
as well.
If you're the Big yep. Ten, you're, and you're eyeing 24, like maybe you think the SEC is eyeing 24 schools. Yeah. You have a West, and you already have yep. two schools. Yeah. Maybe you want a West Coast division of your Big Ten to fill that out. Or if you're a Big 12, you want to expand a little bit. So yeah, they're in a very precarious position as a long-term venture.
Yeah, again, like, you know, the people at my place, the Stuart Mandels and Annie Staples, Nicole Arbachs, Chris Vaninis, et cetera, Bruce Feldman, like they're obviously all over this. I just think if I step back and just sort of think about it logically and as a media sort of play, Stanford, Washington, Oregon, all very, very attractive schools that fit into what the Big Ten tries to sell itself as, which is strong academics. Strong athletics. Now, again, I get that, like, it's very weird to think of West Coast schools in the Big Ten, but, you know, we've already crossed that.
And Rubicon is yeah, way, way crossed. So,
yeah. And now, again, like, I'm not rooting for the Pac-12 to break up because I respect its tradition, and I think it'd be weird if I was, like, an alumnus of Oregon to, like, you know, be playing you know, Michigan State or something like that in the winter in any of these sports. But those three schools, at least for my eyes, Austin, like, they fit into what the Big Ten sort of is. And if, you know, if everything goes helter skelter and like the deal does not come in that these presidents want, I don't know how you can not be a sports fan and not think that somehow any school at this point would leave any conference. Like, you know, you've lived in the last 20 years.
We've seen this 30 for 30 on a requiem for the Big East. I wonder if that's down the road for the Pac-12 now.
Yeah. I know. Chad, I know as a big, you know, I mean, as Boston College, Boston University, Emerson, I mean, these are college football powerhouses. Do you want to add anything to this?
Where the hell did you come up with that group of schools?
Well, actually, it's a terrible job, because Boston College has been an excellent football program at different
we'll
times.
Get into college sports here in New England when they reassemble the old Big East. Until then,
you got some great college hockey programs, though, right?
That's true, yeah. Yeah, get the bean pot. And yeah, regional events, right?
Austin, you know, my Bill Shea and I, my colleague at The Athletic, we did a like, what sports do we think will get a viewership increase in 2023, or what should we keep an eye on? And, you know, obviously, like the facto answer is always like F1, et cetera. I mentioned women's college volleyball, which I am extremely high on and I think is going to pop over the next 2 years. Same with women's college softball. But I do think college hockey is an undervalued asset. Because it has, as Chad just mentioned, massive strength in the Northeast. It's got a great Midwest group of schools, the Minnesotas, the Michigans, the Dakotas, et cetera. And so if you could expand that footprint just a little bit, it's a great sport to attend. You know, again, I'm not saying this is going to be college football, but I don't know. I could see 400,000, 500,000 maybe one day if you really invested in it.
I think you're crazy.
Crazy?
I love you, but you're crazy.
Okay. How about 200? How about 200?
That'd be good. I mean, I see what these Frozen Four numbers doing, and it doesn't do it for me. That's not one of the sports we talk about.
No, you're right.
In terms of the NCAA breaking off potentially for its own deal, that's why it's women's college basketball. That's that's my growth one.
Yeah. Well, 4.44. Yeah. Whatever.
It's nuts.
UConn, South Carolina. What did you get? 4.8 million.
I mean, this past weekend,
million?
I think something crazy. Fox has three basketball games on Saturday, and the UConn women's game beat out the other men's game that they had. That women's basketball, I'm bullish on. And it sounds cliche, but the continued growth of college football separating itself as the number two sport in this country.
All right. All right. Before we let you go, Chad, anything you want to add to this?
I'm curious how the women's college basketball is elevating in terms of interest. I think it was you, Rich, had tweeted, you know, even get bigger when Paige Becker's back. Yeah. But is the men's game losing viewership? I really haven't monitored this very much, but it just seems like this
year is
Austin
could tell you, regular season for sure. I do think, Austin, that March Madness is such a unique property. It's an event as opposed to anything else that I think that should still do well short of like two not sexy teams doing the championship on
CBS.
But I feel like
you see a lot of initial tune in with some of the out of conference you know, early season tournament games in November for college basketball. That's where you're getting some of the biggest numbers of the season, when it's Duke, Michigan State, or Duke, Kansas at the Garden or something like that, in one of those prearranged tournaments. Then it all dips down during conference play. You have Duke for Carolina. Those will be close to the top. And then you're back at March Madness. Yep. Although, you know, I do like what Fox has done in creating that dedicated Saturday night primetime window. They got a really good number after an NFL game this year. That's probably going to end up leading all college basketball games this year as a game on Fox basketball.
Which is amazing. Yeah, this, by the way, the problem for men's college basketball is they can't do anything about the biggest problem, which is that the best players are always going to jump after 1 year, or the best players are going to do stuff like the
NBA.
The G League.
That's going to be part of, obviously one of the biggest things in the CBA.
It's just not a it's not a television show anymore that extends over multiple seasons. If you just think of it as an entertainment product, the product starts over every year. And I think just based on that, you're always going to have issues now compared to what that viewership was, 20, 30 years ago. But I think the tournament will still be a great play on linear television, as long as as long as gambling exists and brackets exist.
I'm bullish on the health of the tournament long term.
Same. And actually, I think if you look at it in hindsight now, the former Turner Sports and CBS signed a great deal. That's turned out to be a really financially where the number is, or when it was signed, like an awesome deal, as well as the extension. All right, Chad Finn is a sports media columnist for the Boston Globe. Check his work out. Austin Karp, Sports Business Journal assistant managing editor /digital. Check his work out. Follow these guys on Twitter. Austin and Chad, thank you very much, and I'll see you soon on Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Rich.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Austin and Chad, as always, for coming on. Always a fun conversation with those two. Previous podcasts, if you're interested, as I mentioned, Marcelo Balboa, Daniel Slayton, and Taylor Twellman, Apple Major League Soccer broadcasters. That was a great conversation. Check that out. Prior to that, we had NASCAR announcers Mike Joy and Larry McReynolds, my colleagues Deshaun Reed and Evan Drellich of The Athletic. Jim Trotter came on this podcast, Adnan Burke and Adam Amin. Head to the archives. There should be some stuff you like. Please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That absolutely helps. Also pushes down some of the blasts for people who are not happy about a particular guest. So that's always helpful as well. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work for this podcast. Thanks to everybody at KX13. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.